I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's March 13th, 2026, and you are listening live to 106.7 The Fan. We will take you all the way up to 6:30 this evening. Got a nice show planned for you on G&D and one final opportunity for somebody to win tickets to go see the Capitals. That's coming up ahead of the Beltway Blitz at 4 o'clock today. Danny, what's up?
Not much, my friend. This has been an extremely busy couple of weeks for you, pal. We got some got a youth sports tournament. We got some baseball getting underway. I irritated everybody last night at our AA draft by asking a lot of questions. So yeah, I mean we're off to a rip roaring start, man. We're doing it. It's all happening.
Yeah, it's all is right with the world when we're day into the league and Danny is already at odds with all the other coaches.
You're kind of exaggerating, but it's also not that far from 100% correct. I think I could tell. This is a trait that I have that my wife has tried to shame out of me over the years. Even when I can sense, I've got a decent amount of the EQ. Even when I sense everyone's annoyed. If I've got that bone, like if I'm the dog on the mailman's hind parts, I can't let it go. This thing is bothering me. I got to keep asking about it. But yeah, so I added probably 15 or 20 minutes to last night's draft whenever we want to just get it done and go home.
I've been blown away just as a fly on the wall, as a guy looking over Danny's shoulder at the prep that has gone into a youth baseball draft. I've been doing a lot of joning. Danny has been scouring tape like he's Paul DeBoney.
Seriously.
I just can't fathom it. When I was a kid, you just got assigned to teams based on like the letter of your last name or how close you live to the coach. And now Danny's out here putting together scouting reports, arguing over which kid should go in which round. It's unbelievable.
It's a different world, man. Different time. Yeah, all we're trying to do at the end of the day is have a good experience for everybody, good teachable moments, you know, hopefully have some fun. And it's hard to do that if you don't have a balanced, you know, set of teams. Like one team's just, you know, running roughshod over everybody, winning 30-2 every week. I don't know who's benefiting from that, right?
That was the Reds when I was in Little League.
The Reds did that?
We were the Braves.
Who coached the Reds?
I don't remember the Reds coach. It might have been like Brent McCullough's dad or something. I don't remember. I know that their pitchers were Thomas Wooldridge and Philip Liggins, and they both threw gas.
Phil Liggins was nasty.
He had some stuff.
So when I was 10, it was Fitzgerald Properties. Yeah, Chris Peterson played at Northwestern. You know, and a couple of Kevin White, McLean High School legend.
Is that a sign of age, by the way, if your baseball teams were named after companies? Because that is such an old movie bit, like Bad News Bears or one of these films.
So they did, for whatever reason, McLean Little League did it that way. And everyone else was like, what team are you on? It's like the Braves, the
But I bet you they don't now. That's what I'm saying. I think it's a sign of the times thing where somewhere between if you are 35 and you're my age or if you're 45 and you're Danny's age, they stopped doing it that way and you started just becoming an actual team. My son just signed up for baseball. His first practice is Saturday. We'll go tomorrow and check out the new vibes for the first time playing above T-ball. But he is on the Raptors. Last year, he was on the Tin Caps, and every team in the league was actually a minor league affiliate of some big league team.
Oh, that's cool.
With actual minor league hats and stuff, which was neat. But it used to be, based on all the movies and based on your experience, Howard's Bakery against Dutchess Mart.
But everybody else's little league did team names. We just let the sponsor right there on the front. So when I was 12, Naval Air, that's a 21-1 team right there. Your district champions. Led by old Randy Duye. And Dan Boyle, by the way. You sleep on Dan Boyle. Hit 10 bombs. Went to Temple. Scully.
It doesn't sound to me like in that draft, the goal was whatever you're trying to have your goal be now. Or was it? I don't know.
What do you mean? In other words,
well, the draft last night, you said the goal is all the teams are even and everyone just goes out and we all have fun. That was like someone put together a juggernaut. There was Jerry Reinsdorf was at the controls and the 90s Bulls showed up.
And he found Kukoc and no one else saw him. This kind of thing.
What was everyone so mad at you about last night?
I kept asking questions. There's something I couldn't understand.
But what was grinding your gears?
Well, not the grinding my gears specifically. It was more that I don't know how to explain it. I just didn't understand something about how because, you know, we're all dads, right? This isn't like pro coaching. This isn't like travel stuff where it's like you pay $30,000 and you're going to tournaments in Puerto Rico and Arizona and upstate New York every other weekend to play teams from Springfield. This is Little League stuff. So we're all dads. We're all volunteering. And your kids are going to be on the team too. It's the only way I could get into the league was, or my kid getting in the league because we were late signups, was like, hey, we have so many kids. If you want to coach, it's great. And we went a whole back and forth.
You weren't trading kids back and forth last night, were
you?
No.
And I was like, I would love to coach, but I work until 6:30 every day. I don't get home until 7. I can never make practices. So I got a co-coach with everybody, worked it out. And everyone's so nice and very generous. But your kid is assigned a round or a grade or whatever, or the teams that are the coach's kids are given around. And I couldn't understand how, what, where, when, and why, and the different things and the policy and stuff like that. And I kept asking questions. And I could sense after my third follow-up that everyone was just trying to get me to stop talking.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. And it's, by the way, it's exactly like you imagine it. Everyone's very nice. And I tried everyone's patience.
Your goal was altruistic. And I think you were operating, based on what you're saying, I'm taking you at face value and I believe you, that you were just trying to have the teams be as even as possible so that everyone could have fun and learn. Do you think it was taken in a different way?
No. You're ascribing a whole different thing to it. I literally didn't understand.
Right.
There's a difference between advocating for something and not understanding.
Okay.
This is the latter.
So you were just asking a bunch of questions.
Yes.
And they just kept saying, can we start? I've got to be home because I've got the oven on.
No one said, can we start? But it was in their eyes.
Okay.
They wanted to begin. And everyone's like, see, there. What if there was a dog? And he went into a house and he didn't look upstairs. I'm like, I don't get any of the analogies. Help me understand this. And finally, I just said, you know what? I understand that everyone's irritated. Let's just start.
What's your team name going to be?
We don't know. I don't know. Right now, it's Team Rouye, which you don't want to be. You don't want to be that.
So will you? I mean, is it possible you stay Team Rouye?
I hope not. I mean, that's just the way it's assigned right now,
so
and like all the different things.
Pick a name as a team at your first practice. Everyone will come together. You'll be a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Or the T-Rexes, and then you'll move on. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Best of luck to the T-Rexes.
To the Rex Huddlers, the Wonder Dogs.
I look forward to the updates. A couple of things I wanted to get into right off the top here on Grant and Danny. Speaking of everybody wanting to start, let's start this thing. Veteran quarterback market starting to dry up just a little bit. Yesterday, during our show, Kyler Murray agrees to a deal with the Minnesota Vikings. So he's off the board now. If you look at who has landed at QB in free agency, Murray to Minnesota, Geno Smith back home to the New York Jets as a different, more mature, much older man than he was when he left there.
It feels right, though, doesn't it?
Tua Tagovailoa, like Murray, after being cut and dead money and sued by the incumbent team. Tua in Atlanta, going to play for the minimum, essentially. And then the one guy that was able to sign for any real money was Malik Willis, who goes to the Miami Dolphins from the Green Bay Packers following Jeff Hafley, the new head coach in Miami, who was the DC in Green Bay where Willis played pretty well and had some nice tape, albeit in a very small sample size, playing for Jordan Love at times last year. Murray, Geno, Tua, and Willis. Of those guys, whether it be fit, supporting cast, situation, what have you, if you had to pick one to reinvigorate their career with a really strong 2026 season, so we fast forward a year, and we're talking way more positively about someone than we are right now. Let's go through the ranking and process of elimination, rule guys out.
Okay.
I think Geno, because of his age and how bad the Jets are, has the least chance to be the Sam Darnold story next year.
I agree on that.
All right, so we're going to cross him off the list. This is like a standardized test. Now we've got Murray, Minnesota, Tua, Atlanta, Malik Willis, Miami. What do you want to cross off next?
I'm going to cross off Tua.
That would be my next one as well. What's your logic?
I don't like the situation. I don't like anything about it. It's a, well, we're just going to have you come in because you're left-handed, and so is Michael Penix. It's like they're not rooting for him to succeed. He's one part caretaker, learning something brand new, away from that Mike McDaniel nest. There's no Tyreek Hill to bail you out. I like some of the pieces in Atlanta. Bijan Robinson, I think Drake London's good, but I don't know. I just don't trust that. It just feels like they're on team can't get right.
I'm going to put Tua there as well. I actually do like the coaching situation now. Kevin Stefanski, sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Good offensive mind, stellar play caller, pretty good designer, marrying run and pass. I think there's some things you can work with there. Drake London's a very good wide receiver. Not exceptional, not top 10, but a strong player. And they tag Kyle Pitts, so you've got a couple of weapons. Bijan Robinson's maybe the best back in the entire league. So supporting cast, coaching, play calling, players, it's all really good. Tua in Atlanta maybe has a chance to be better than Malik Willis in Miami. In fact, I'm talking myself into that. I'm going to cross Malik Willis off the list next, and I would rank him kind of third and Tua second on the list. But assuming...
It was between those two for me.
So that means that you agree with me. The guy that has the best chance to reclaim their career now is Kyler Murray with Justin Jefferson and Kevin O'Connell.
I've just seen it multiple times. Like, that's where you go. You talk about weapons. You talk about options. If you're wrong, Justin Jefferson makes you right. If he's covered, he's open. Just throw it to him.
Hasn't worked for everybody. I mean, Carson Wentz went there, and it went badly.
Sure, I think he stinks
Darnold's
so much.
The only guy where you could say, I mean, Cousins obviously played at a great level.
Yeah, I'd say Cousins 2.0 and Darnold. But if there's anybody that can do it, it's Kevin O'Connell with Justin Jefferson and some pretty good weapons around him.
I just wonder how well it's going to work. I don't view him as much of a schematic fit. They're going to have to move the pocket a lot more. What Kevin O'Connell has liked to do in the passing game is operate in the middle of the field on stuff with mostly the quarterback in the pocket. Not that Sam Darnold was as immobile as Kirk Cousins tends to be and just kind of flat-footed and standing there and making all the throws as a pocket passer. But think about the Minnesota offense. You kind of always know where the quarterback's going to be. It was a little bit different when Patrick Dobbs played for them for a short time. He was a little more mobile. J.J. McCarthy, who's athletic, moves around some. It's not to say they don't bootleg and get him moving a little bit, but for the most part, it's play action, pop passes, over top of the line of scrimmage. Does Kyler see it well enough in the middle of the field? Is he able to pick those things apart? Tight end, wide receiver, dig routes?
It's a challenge for O'Connell, but I feel like he's one of the five guys I'd go, I trust him. He'll figure it out, right? Because I think your assessment's right on. I don't want Kyler Murray under center a ton, doing the normal turn your back to the defense, fake the handoff, get to the top of your drop, look over 6'5", you know, lineman bearing down on him and hitting somebody behind the linebackers in front of the safeties. That's not his wheelhouse. Maybe it's you're doing similar stuff, but from the pistol. Maybe you, as you said, move the pocket a lot more. I mean, he's still a threat athletically, and I think O'Connell can design some stuff for him to succeed. I just feel like he's such a whisperer that it'll work well.
Cousins is, speaking of him, one of the last guys available now among those veteran looking for a starter job. Tier quarterbacks?
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
I keep hearing Raiders as an option. Now, they're going to take Fernando Mendoza 1-1. You would think that would mean that Fernando Mendoza is going to start because you almost never see a first overall quarterback, especially a guy that just had the college season he had at Indiana, going circuit to circuit, winning the Heisman, not start right away. But I could see a path where Clint Kubiak, who Cousins has played with in Minnesota, is very close with, the Kubiaks, the Shanahans. It's kind of this like incestuous coaching thing where they follow each other around. Obviously, Cousins very tied into that tree. I could see a scenario where Kirk went there to be a starter as a bridge guy for a short time before they went to Fernando Mendoza. That's one to look out for. But it wasn't a great collection of veterans as it is, and it didn't take long. Here we are on Friday of week one of free agency, and the game of musical chairs at QB is about done. The music is about to turn off.
Yeah. Again, I said this a million times. This is a terrible year to need a quarterback.
I feel like that's most years, too, by the way.
Fair enough. But I think it's because the draft is so bereft of difference makers. And the guy that's going 1-1 just led one of the great seasons anyone's ever seen. But there's still some, are we sure? This ain't Joe Burrow. What Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be.
That's a good point. Especially, like, it's not a bad year most of the time to pick 2 through 5 and need a quarterback.
Right.
This year, you pick 2 through 5 and need a quarterback. It still stinks.
Yeah, you're doing Ty Simpson bits? No way, right?
If you're looking for a good veteran, most years it's not going to work because those guys are never available.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, even in the draft, outside of going 1-1 with Mendoza, and I think he's more of a project than people think, the more I've watched and seen. I don't know, man. It's just... the makeup is off the charts.
Right. Like, I would trust him to figure it out, like, over a lot of other people.
Agreed.
But, man, oh, man.
watch that offense and tell me it's impressive or NFL caliber and the conceptual, you know, scheme that they run. It's just so much like back shoulder and go make a play, schoolyard stuff. I don't know. I think it's going to take a little time for Fernando Mendoza. And it's also just strange to me how little analysis has been done on him. It's this understood thing that, like, we separate the first pick and him, and now we talk about the rest of the draft. I don't know that there's ever been a QB that's come out that's been picked apart less than Mendoza. It's very strange.
That's actually an astute point. I think you're 100% right about that. Because, I mean, we knew, I mentioned Trevor Lawrence already, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton. You think of the guys that we knew for a long time were going to go 1-1. You just knew. Now, for Luck, it was 2 years. For Lawrence, it was 3 years, right? Where this was the guy that's, you know, had nothing. The only thing he could do was fall. Same with kind of Caleb Williams. You saw these guys so much, but we didn't really have that for Mendoza. It feel like they burst onto the scene, went, you know, undefeated and kicked everyone's butt, and everyone's going, yep, you just kind of have to now, right? There hasn't been that. Are we sure? Did we see any of these other throws before this magical carpet ride?
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll get into Brandon Ayuk as a possibility for the Commanders coming up in just a couple of minutes. We were going to do that yesterday when Rashad White signed, and then we never got back to it. So that's coming up on the show. Real quick, though, I wanted to squeeze this in. Bam Adebayo hung 83 on the Wiz this week. Mm-hmm. We talked about that on the show. For the first time within the last now 24 hours, we've gotten a chance to hear the thoughts of not only Adebayo, but also his head coach, Eric Spoelstra. They've been taking a little bit of heat for surpassing Kobe Bryant's 81, for leaving him in the game, for some of the, I thought, embarrassing decisions along the way. I mean, you had a guy bricking a free throw on purpose. They're fouling to get the ball back. It just seemed really amateur hour and childish, some of the stuff that was happening to get him over Kobe's number of 81. I don't think that they owed it to basketball or the late Kobe Bryant not to score 83. I think that's silly. But just how they did it mattered to me. It was a foolhardy 83, if there's such a thing. I'm not trying to take away from the accomplishment, but the last 4 minutes of that game, I mean, he's at the line constantly, and he's just throwing up shots as people are hacking him. This was Bam Adebayo, as he has taken some heat the last few days about scoring 83, basically saying, leave me alone.
If you're in my shoes and you have, first of all, y'all are blaming me. You should be blaming the head coach. Get that first. I was not the one letting me go one-on-one the whole game until I had 70, and then you started to send a double. At that point, I got 70 with, like, what, 9 minutes left to go in the game? You think I'm not going for it? And that's the thing that's crazy when they talk about the unethical part of the basketball. I'm like, if I have 70 with 9 minutes to go, who would just be like, you know, coach, just take me out? Yeah, right. Anybody in my shoes with 9 minutes left? Okay. A minute? All right. Nine? Yeah, I'm going for it. You can't be mad at that. If you are mad, I don't care, because a lot of people, they're upset because if they did play, they never had a chance to get that close to chasing greatness.
So I actually agree with almost everything he said there. And I disagree with the very notion that the 81 of Kobe should be this number that nobody tries to surpass because of the tragic end to his life or whatever. There's 9 minutes left. I'm at 70. I'm going to keep playing basketball.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to take issue with anyone, it should be Eric Spoelstra, his head coach, who didn't pull him from the game. I mean, now, I don't know that he should have or would have. Again, he's thinking the same thing. Oh, my God, this guy has a chance to do something that nobody's done. My issues, again, when it comes to the Heat are stop bricking free throws on purpose when you're up 25. That's a joke. Stop calling timeouts. Why are you challenging up 25 to try to get him back to the line? Like, those types of things I thought were ridiculous. Nothing that Bam Adebayo did. But the point he made that actually made the most sense was, blame the Wizards, man. They're the ones that should feel the shame. Blame the head coach of the Wizards, who didn't decide to double me until I had scored 70 on them. Because it was weird. With 4 minutes left, they put Bilal Coulibaly on him, their stopper, and he starts like face guarding him and grabbing him by the jersey when they're about to inbound the ball. It's like, now they care that he's at 70 with a few minutes left? It was very, very strange to me. 57, they weren't annoyed yet.
Right, you weren't annoyed at 43 at halftime.
Right.
You know?
But then they got really upset. So I hear that from Bam, and I go, yeah, I'm with you, man.
I don't begrudge going after that scoring total from the player. So if anybody's ripping Bam Adebayo, no thank you. Yeah, he was taking irresponsible shots. If the game had been a one-point, you know, a game that was going to go to overtime, a game that the Heat need, I'm going, that may not be the best course of action, but if it comes in the flow of the offense, no problem. But it's a blowout win. You're going to win. You probably would be resting otherwise in this load management era, but you're going for something that's hallowed ground for these guys. They all grew up idolizing Kobe Bryant. They watched Kobe Bryant, and he was godlike to them. Surpassing that number lives in immortality. It's not the same way it was with Will Chamberlain's 100. I don't know how to explain the difference, but we know what happened with Will Chamberlain. There's just that piece of paper with him holding up 100. Everybody saw Jalen Rose and everybody else get just cooked by Kobe Bryant for that 81 points, and it's a night that lives in basketball history. You're going after that, and you should. You probably convince your coach, do not take me out, please. I'm going after something where I will live in the record books or in, you know, time in memoriam as a for hoops. I understand that completely. I don't necessarily have a problem with Spoelstra leaving him in. I didn't love some of the things that you said, like a guy throwing a fastball off the rim in order to get Bam another possession or two.
Which is neither of their fault necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Spoelstra or you're Bam and you're encouraging that kind of behavior, now I'll bring you into it. But I think more so some of the players just got so wrapped into it, his teammates.
Right.
It's like, if we're going to do this, it's got to happen a little more naturally. How you get there matters. The reason we're talking about this right now is that these guys really at length spoke about this for the first time since some of the reaction. This was Spoelstra last night, who really doesn't want to hear from anybody about how he handled it.
I apologize to absolutely no one. Period. And, you know, going into the game, you know, it's a Tuesday night game against a team where they're not playing for anything, where their organization is trying to lose. We've already lost a game, you know, in that kind of situation. We have players that are sitting out, and I spoke to Bam about, I want, as our best player and team captain, for him to be locked in and ready. And he sure was.
He went full Conor McGregor there. I apologize to absolutely no one. Points out that they're playing the Wizards, who are trying to lose. Doesn't feel good to hear. It's one of those things we can talk about in our house as a family. Right. I don't like when someone else outside the house says it, and that's what happened with Spoelstra there. An embarrassing night, clearly. The Wizards have moved on. Bilal Coulibaly and the boys played last night. He had his best quarter of basketball I've ever seen him play in the fourth quarter.
You're dynamite.
The Wiz scored 42 and got to overtime and lost, so everybody's did all the things they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to get your quick reaction because we had heard more from Adebayo and Spoelstra. And because of free agency, probably left some meat on the bone there with one of the craziest sports accomplishments that has happened in our lifetime, and it was against the Wizards.
Yeah, it was. The whole thing was surreal, man. It was bizarre to watch. I'm like both rooting for it and against it, and I was a little bit cringe, but at the same time, I'm going, I can't believe that just happened. I'm just a weird little pile of emotions on my couch.
What do I do with my hands?
Yeah, what am I supposed to do?
Do I want this shot to go in or not? Who knows? Brandon Ayuk could be coming to D.C. We'll give you some details next. Grant and Danny just getting going on The Fan.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.